It is called The Uptown Theater, Movies, Music, and Memories. It is the story of a legendary performance venue at Broad and Dauphin Streets. You could see big names such as James Brown, The Supremes, Barbara Mason, and Georgie Woods going in and out on a regular basis. And while the building remains closed these days, the spirit of the performance venue, it is very much alive.
And it is with us today as we talk about the Uptown. And here with us in studio is Temple professor and historian Bryant Simon, who is also part of this WHYY documentary. Bryant, welcome to Studio 2.
Glad to be here.
And then just back from sunny Southern California, Philly music legend Barbara Mason is with us to share her memories of the Uptown. Barbara Mason, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you very much. And how is everyone doing?
We're doing well, especially since you're here.
Exactly.
And we want to hear from you, listeners. Share your favorite memory of the Uptown. Give us a call, 888-477-9499, or email studio2@whyy.org.
And so, you know, the Uptown Theater still looms very large on North Broad Street in North Philly, but it is truly a mere shell of itself. And so, Brian, I want to start with you. Take us back historically to the glory days of the Uptown Theater. Describe what it looked like and what it likely meant to the community.
Well, the first thing probably we want to know about the Uptown is it started as a movie theater. But it started when movie theaters were these palaces. They were built to wow and overwhelm people. And so that movie theater with the kind of constellations on the ceiling and gilded toppings and a velvet curtain, that was all there in late 1950s and early 1960s. And, you know, if you take one of these kind of legendary performances in the 60s, they would start as early as noon or before noon, and you might get 7 or 8 acts that would play for hours. And by the end, the bands, maybe the Temptations and maybe the Stylistics, would be in full-on competition with each other, trying to win the loudest applause and bring the house down.
And you mentioned it started as a movie theater and right at the end of the 20s, right?
Yeah. Right before the stock market
not
crash.
Good timing.
Yeah.
but it has this comeback as a performance venue. 50s, 60s, Bryant, tell me about the neighborhood that the Uptown was in.
Well, you have to understand the Uptown's part of like a circuit of theaters that sometimes gets called the Chitlin Circuit. And there was a place where black performers performed for black audiences. Mm-hmm. The neighborhood was largely black. But it was also, I mean, I think it's important to understand that segregation also created these opportunities. This was a place that nurtured black art and nurtured black performers and allowed people to see the kind of beauty of those performances. And I think it's really important to understand the Uptown of this moment, right? It's this moment of segregation that we've come to believe, and we should, right, of its oppressive qualities, but it also created opportunity.
Yeah. And speaking of, you know, black artists performing for a black audience, I want to cue up this clip. We have many visitors, including Dr. Bernita Brown, Olivia Riley, and Vivian Whitehead Gary, remember the Isley Brothers and their legendary performances at the Uptown. Take a listen. You know you
make me wanna. Isley Brothers would come in and they would fly through the air and the audience would just be pumped up and ready to go.
Every time they sang Shout, the audience threw their hands up, jumped up and down. It was just crazy in there.
It was like they was never going to end it. I mean, we were down there screaming and hollering. It had to be over half an hour, 45 minutes.
And it felt like the whole building was jumping up and down. It was a completely filled audience.
Ron Isley, you know, he'd get loose, you know, opening his shirt and throwing the tie, and it was just wonderful. Yes, they were the greatest.
Now wait a minute.
I tell you, I have a big smile
right
on my
now.
Face. I want to shout, too. I want to bring Barbara Mason into the conversation. Barbara's a Philly native who not only attended events at the Uptown, but also performed. Barbara, I want to just ask you, first of all, what did the Uptown Theater mean to you as a member of the community and as one who sat in that seat within the audience?
It really meant to me, I started very, I was very young when I went to the Uptown. I was only 18 years old. That was my first performance. And when I was asked to perform there, I really got a chance to work with a lot of legends like Gladys Knight and the Pips, the Dells, and just being that young and being in that environment. Of course, I was raised in North Philadelphia, so I knew about the whole area, and also people coming from my neighborhood to come see me there. I was a bit kind of nervous and stuff, my first time being in a venue of that magnitude. But I've always cherished it. It was the first theater that I had ever worked at, and it still, you know, means a lot to me today.
Barbara, how would you describe the audience at the Uptown compared to, you know, other venues you played?
They were remarkable, as the young lady just said. I mean, something about Philadelphia people, you know, like their loyalty. They would, I know when I came on to do my song, they were just, it's just different. I can't hardly explain it. They were very appreciative. Of course, we would be there like for 10 days, and then we would have the midnight show, and people, the lines were out there, and it was just awesome. I will never forget it, because that's where I first started. So I've been all over, and I haven't seen an audience, you know, like that.
Wow. And Bryant, I mean, explain a little bit about the Chitlin Circuit and the need for the Uptown and how things shifted once integration happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing we have to remember is segregation was a national phenomenon. And so black artists couldn't play anywhere. And they played a series of theaters, many of them white-owned, up and down the East Coast, into the South, and into the Midwest. And this is where they could perform. Mm. But because it was a limited market, they were paid less and had to perform more. And essentially what happens is the neighborhood around the Uptown decays somewhat. But I think the more important thing is that segregation breaks down. And someone like Stevie Wonder can play the Spectrum for five times as many people.
Way more money.
And one set. He's not playing five sets a day for a 10-set gig. And so the kind of really most dynamic and kind of most popular performers get pulled out by the old Latin casino in Cherry Hill. And think about it, this also happens when the casinos open in Atlantic City. And they just sort of suck out the talent, right? They take the best of the talent or the most popular, leaving this kind of other set of groups with almost no place to play. Wow. Or much diminished theaters. And the Uptown itself begins to crumble. And by 1990... it's a evangelical church.
Barbara, can you explain the economics from your end? Like, how much would you get paid for performing at the Uptown? And then sort of as your career progressed and you played other venues, did that change, you know, your personal financial situation?
It did, yes, absolutely. I can remember probably getting maybe less than $1,000. When I did go on the road to do tours and such, I probably got about $1,750 a week. And, you know, like I said, we did, I mean, I was in every venue all through the South, as you said, everywhere. I played everywhere. And money-wise, you could see a number of acts, and the top figure that I remember was probably $3.50, that you would see 20 acts. And so you can imagine who gets what from $3.50. So nobody was really making money. I mean, even the top acts, you know, the stars, the Jackie Wilsons, I was on many of his shows. He wasn't making, I mean, he was making more than me,
but we, you know, nobody made any money.
Yeah, but people love the Uptown. And one person that we know loves the Uptown is Barbara.
Kai,
who is on the line and wants to talk about growing up, going to the Uptown. Kai, you're on Studio 2. You loved the Uptown, growing up Uptown.
Yes,
tell us your story.
I started going to the Uptown when I was about 6 or 7. My mother would take me to the night shows, which were different than the day shows.
Mm.
So I got to see the comedians like Moms Mabley and Red Fox and Pig Meat Markham that were very risque. But I lived in Strawberry Mansion, so we could actually walk to the Uptown, really. I lived on 28th Street. And actually, the Uptown, the demise of the Uptown, really didn't have anything to do with integration, because parts of North Philly, we still had white people living on our street. So, but when the Spectrum opened down in South Philly, that was a huge stadium, you know, where they had shows. So the producers and everything wanted to have shows there because they could get more people in there. So, you know, why would you book the Uptown with maybe 500, 1,000 people can fit in there when you can fit 2, 3, 4,000 people in the Spectrum, so that everybody start having concerts at the Spectrum? And sadly, that's what happened to the Uptown. But I love it. I will always cherish those days. Apollo has nothing on the Uptown.
Thank you so much, Kai.
Before we go, and that's a wonderful call, thank you, I just want to make sure we mention Georgie Woods, the legendary DJ, but that really doesn't do him justice. Brian, can you just quickly talk about, you know, his role in making the Uptown what it was?
Yeah, Georgie Woods was famous DJ in town, and he started producing the shows at the Uptown, and he would book the acts he played on the radio, but that's not where Georgie Woods stopped. He was a really crucial civil rights figure in the city, and the Uptown was part of that. So the NAACP, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, had fundraisers at the Uptown that Georgie Woods sponsored. And in 1963, when the buses left Philadelphia to go to the March on Washington, they left from the Uptown with Georgie Woods on them. And he would march in Selma. I think there's a really interesting kind of intersection between the Uptown and the civil rights movement.
Yeah,
and
DJs were a big deal back then. I think, Barbara, you were managed by a DJ, right? Jimmy Bishop?
Oh, yes. Yes, I was. Yes, Jimmy managed me. He sure did. Mm-hmm.
And as we wrap up, Barbara, do you have any Georgie Wood memory that you want to share?
Oh, God. I miss him so much. Yes, I know he was the first promoter to booked me at the Uptown, and by him, you know, being on WDAS and one of the top disc jockeys there, he was a wonderful, kind person. You know, he just didn't play like certain people's records, and then he didn't play certain people's other records. He was fair to everyone, and I just miss him. I had a personal friendship with him. We would talk in the mornings on radio. Sometimes I would call the station and just say, thank you, I heard my record this morning, you know. And so it was
there it
I
is
him, and he was the greatest.
That is
your record playing right
yes,
now.
Ready. Thank you so much, Barbara Mason, for being with us today.
I hear it. Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you, Brian Simon from Temple, for helping us understand the Uptown theater.